I want real solutions, not just campaign promises.
There's so much media bias and misinformation. I can't keep things straight.
I don't know who to trust. What am I supposed to do? Take my neighbor's word for it?
Why is it always the other guy's fault? What about accountability?
I'm split on issues, stuck between parties. What do I do now?
Did you know independent voters are America's largest voting bloc?
Yeah, but they totally feel politically homeless. Like, the two-party system just ignores them.
Independent voters, you're overlooked no more. This is our time to shine and stand together. You're listening to Independent Times.
So what's the deal with politics? I don't get it. Am I right, people?
It's not the best of times, nor the worst, but these are undoubtedly independent times. Welcome to Independent Times, the podcast for politically homeless independent voters navigating our polarized world. I'm your host, Lisa Singer, and I'm so grateful you could join us today. We just laughed with a classic Seinfeld clip poking fun at our divided politics. But for independent voters, the struggle is real. You're America's largest voting bloc, yet independent politicians are scarce. Today, we'll spotlight a few, like Ross Perot and Andrew Yang, and dig into why they're so rare and the barriers they face. With so few independent politicians to choose from, independents who are struggling to find representation became the largest group of split-ticket voters in the 2024 election. This tipped critical swing states like Arizona and Michigan to Donald Trump, which showed us all once again their ability to swing an election. Joining me are my co-hosts, award-winning journalist and host of Fox 24 News Now, Leila Gulid, and Emmy Award-winning news host and producer, Brian Gallo. Welcome.
I'm Brian Gallo, and I'm looking forward to diving into this with you, Lisa. There's a lot of conversation right now about the need for independent voices.
And I'm Leila Gulin. I'm thrilled to be here with you to discuss this topic. It's critical for independent voters to understand who the actual independent voices are and what they represent in our political system.
Thanks, Brian and Leila, and welcome to our listeners. When I think about independent politicians, Ross Perot is the first who comes to mind. His 1992 presidential campaign shook up the two-party system like few others have done. So let's begin our discussion there. But first, let's revisit his impact with a clip from that historic campaign.
Let's go down to Grassroots America, where the people are hurting, and everybody's saying, why are we in this mess? First thing I'd like you to do, all of you, is look in the mirror. We're the owners of this country.
Is there any scenario in which you would run for president? Can you give me a scenario in which you'd say, okay, I'm in?
If you're that serious, you, the people, are that serious, you register me in 50 states.
The volunteers in all 50 states have asked me to run as a candidate for President of the United States. Jim Stockdale, our vice presidential candidate, and I are honored to accept their request.
He's back. Ross Perot reverses himself, jumps back in, and now it's a three-man race for the White House.
Neither political party has effectively addressed the issues that concern the American people. They've asked me to run this campaign on the issues and to assure that the problems that the American people are concerned with will be dealt with after this election is over.
The Texans' populist campaign lasered on stagnant wages and big government. Perot became a favorite target of comedians.
I can't deal with a problem unless I can feel it, touch it, smell it, taste it, and touch a little more.
And won 19% of the vote, the most successful third-party candidate since Teddy Roosevelt.
That 1992 clip shows how an independent like Ross Perot can be a big disruptor in the status quo of the two-party system during an election. However, the polling data that I've seen shows that independent voters want more than third-party spoilers like Ralph Nader. They all remember what happened in the 2000 presidential election when Ralph Nader helped tip Florida to George Bush. Yet with 43% of Americans now identifying as independents, there seems to be an imbalance with how many independent voters there are and the number of independent candidates, which seem to be extremely rare in our electoral system. So I wonder what barriers hold independent candidates back in our polarized system,
And when they do come to office, can they even make a real difference, if at all? So let's survey the playing field next. Brian, Layla, who comes to mind when you hear independent politician?
I'll go first. When I think of an independent politician, I definitely think of Ross Perot. But I also think about the longest serving independent elected official in America, Senator Bernie Sanders, of course, from Vermont, who, you know, he said he wanted to spark a political revolution when he ran for president on the Democratic ticket and lost to Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Here's a clip of Bernie Sanders, in his own words, calling for a political revolution.
Now is the time for a political revolution. Political revolution.
Political revolution.
No more B-2 bombers. No more Star Wars. Let's make the quality products we need. Let's invest in American industry. No, I won't yield.
For years, we have loved Saudi Arabia, our wonderful ally. Only problem is the people who run that country are murderous thugs.
I happen to believe that our trade policies over the years have been a disaster for workers in this country.
Not me. Us. Proud to announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
Although Sanders is officially an independent, he caucuses with the Democrats and usually votes with the Democratic senators along party lines. I recently saw Senator Sanders on Joe Rogan, along with 5 million other Americans. They discussed, among other things, climate change, of course, President Trump suing the free press, and also the need to raise the minimum wage.
I remember that episode. That was a great interview. And I heard that it was one of Joe Rogan's most watched episodes ever. So let's go ahead and play a clip on what Rogan and Sanders discussed about the minimum wage.
I have talked to people who make 10, 12 bucks an hour trying to raise a kid.
Jesus.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the argument against that is, hey, these are entry-level jobs that are supposed to be for kids.
No, that's factually incorrect. Yeah, of course, it's true to some degree.
But if you have grown adults that are working those jobs, now it becomes disgusting.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Especially when you're dealing with an enormous corporation.
You got it.
Right.
So we put a lot of pressure. You know, we are trying to raise the minimum wage, federal minimum wage, to 17 bucks an hour.
That's a reasonable amount of money. You know, I mean, it's going to be real difficult to live off of 17 bucks an hour.
But at least that's right.
At least you get a sandwich in under 2 hours worth of work.
When it comes to independent politicians, I also think about the only other independent senator, Angus King. You know, he was elected as the independent from Maine and typically caucuses with the Democrats as well. And I once heard him say that being independent is part of the culture in the state of Maine, which I actually found pretty interesting.
Well, it sounds like we need to interview independent Senator King. I remember when he was on Paul Rykoff's podcast, The Independent American, and the two of them did discuss the heritage of Maine, leaning very, very independent. Let's go ahead and play a clip.
Well, part of it, I think, is in Maine's heritage. And by the way, there was an independent governor 20 years before me in the 70s. That helped me to be credible when I was running in the 90s. But part of it is Maine's history and heritage of fishing, farming, and forestry. What do those have in common? They're all independent pursuits. They're not big corporate enterprises. They're independent pursuits. So in the state of Maine, we know one another. We still have a community, and who you are and your character is much more important than your party. And I'm pretty sure that still the majority of the voters in Maine are unenrolled in either party.
Here's a wild stat. Out of 7,386 state legislative seats nationwide, only 25 are held by independents. And in the U.S. House of Representatives, zero. Zero independent elected officials. Brian, who comes to mind when I say independent politician or candidate?
Pressure's on. All right. Well, when I think about independent politicians, I think of Andrew Yang. We all remember him, obviously. He campaigned in 2020 with the concept of universal basic income, which I found to be fascinating, obviously, because who couldn't benefit from a little extra monthly cash, right?
That would be nice, especially now. And I remember when Andrew Yang spoke to Major Garrett on the Takeout podcast. So let's go ahead and play a clip of Andrew making the case for universal basic income back in 2020.
Guaranteed universal income. Explain what that is.
Yeah, so it's a very old idea. The idea is that
as old as Sir Thomas More, I have read.
Yeah, no, it goes back even before the founding of the country. So it's an idea where every citizen of a society gets a certain amount of money or resources free and clear to do whatever you want to meet your basic
regardless needs. Of your income.
Regardless of your income. So Thomas Paine called it the citizen's dividend and was for it at the founding of the country. Martin Luther King called it a guaranteed minimum income in the 60s. Milton Friedman called it a negative income tax and had the support of 1,000 economists in the 70s. And it even
Richard Nixon seriously considered it.
Yeah, it passed
and it was debated in Congress.
Yeah, it passed the House of Representatives twice in 1971 under Nixon. And one state has actually passed something virtually identical, which is the petroleum dividend of Alaska.
But after his failed 2020 presidential campaign, Yang also ran for mayor in New York City in 2021 as a Democrat. And he later announced his departure from the Democratic Party to become an independent and subsequently founded the Forward Party, a centrist political party aimed at offering an alternative to the two major parties. They have already gotten around a dozen people elected to local office. All politics is local, right?
Right. Exactly. Tip O'Neill was the one who famously said that, and that still holds true for many independent voters. Let's go ahead and play a clip of Andrew Yang, who explained his vision for the Forward Party back in 2020 as a guest on Good Morning America.
Breaking up with the Democratic Party, so to speak, and you said this, I'll quote you, you're confident that no longer being a Democrat is the right thing. What made it wrong?
Right now, we can sense that polarization is at record highs in our country. We're actually at civil war levels of political stress, and it's manifesting in violence on our streets. We have to bring the temperature of the country down. And believe it or not, there's a concrete way for us to do that. Where right now, our politicians' incentives lie on placating the most extreme 20% of voters in each of their districts, because that's the way our system is designed. So what we have to do is change that. We need open primaries and ranked choice voting so that leaders have to appeal to 51% of voters instead of the 20% on most on both extremes. And then you'd see their behavior improve overnight. So that's what the Forward Party is about.
However, I also agree with Layla that Ross Perot comes to mind first and foremost, right? I mean, beyond him, though, I find it really fascinating and perhaps a little troubling for some how politicians can just switch parties, like we saw with Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, right? While both left the Senate and didn't run in 2024, their decisions to become independents highlight an odd aspect of political party affiliation, in my opinion.
Agreed, Brian. And you've raised a really vital point about our electoral system. We do have sore loser rules in the U.S., and they're there to prevent candidates who lose a party primary and then suddenly decide that they want to run in the same election, but under a different party. And when I think about that, the example that comes to mind first and foremost for me is Joe Lieberman. He was a lifelong Democrat. He even was the VP nominee for Al Gore in the presidential election. But when he was running for the Senate in 2006, I think, he lost the Connecticut Democratic Senate primary to Ned Lamont. But then he ran in the same election as an independent, and then he won his fourth Senate term. And we're watching the exact same thing unfold right now in New York in the upcoming mayoral race this November. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Eric Adams both were lifelong Democrats, and now they're both running as independents. Here's a quick montage I put together from the 2025 New York City mayor's race, where Cuomo and Adams both explain why they switched parties after losing the Democratic primary.
All right, thank you so much. Now to the breaking news in the race for New York City mayor. 3 weeks after his loss to Zohran Mamdani in the Democratic primary, former Governor Andrew Cuomo just released a new campaign ad announcing he will actively stay in the race. He'll appear on the ballot on an independent ballot line.
Only 13% of New Yorkers voted in the June primary. The general election is in November, and I am in it to win it.
Yes, Stephen, Natasha, Mayor Adams says he's still got fight left in him, even if he isn't able to do it as a Democratic candidate. That's why he says he is switching parties, but not his values.
I'm not a quitter. I'm a New Yorker. And that is why today, although I am still a Democrat, I am announcing that I will forego the Democratic primary for mayor and appeal directly to all New Yorkers as an independent candidate in the general election.
Well, maybe our country can't handle more than two parties. Maybe that's the issue. You know, is it in the Constitution that we are a two-party system?
The short answer to your question is that the Constitution doesn't specify the number of political parties we can have in the country. Instead, it's up to every single state to run their own election, which is one of the reasons why voting in America can be so complicated, because every state basically has their own set of rules. So it's really difficult for the 9 million Americans who live abroad. It's very difficult for those who are in the armed services, serving in our military. And just even think about personally, just if you had to move from state to state, and it's in the year of a federal election, how difficult that would be to register. You could miss those windows very, very easily.
Let me jump in because I need some clarity. So there have only been a few political parties in this country?
There are two main parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, but actually there have been hundreds of third parties over the course of U.S. history. And if you go to Wikipedia, it'll blow your mind to see what they stood for. But most of them were short-lived and didn't gain traction. But there are, you know, some that are really popular and people know about their history, the Populist Party, the Progressive Party, Socialist Party. There was one called the Prohibition Party. The Reform Party is pretty well known. That was the party of Ross Perot that we just talked about. And they're still around. There's the Libertarian Party, the Green Party. And on Ballotpedia, which is an amazing place to get tons and tons of information about elections, they claim that there are 50 active parties in the United States.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I do like Ballotpedia myself. It does have great information, but you never really hear about those other parties except for Republicans, Democrats, and independents.
Right. And so, like, I've heard about the Green Party, obviously, and Jill Stein, right? She was on the ticket. So where is she now? You know, never mind, scratch that.
Steve Kornacki said that ultimately, independents vote for one party or another.
Independents definitely vote for one party or another. That's true. But it's a bit more complicated than that. So let's go ahead and have a listen to Steve Kornacki break down how independents end up voting.
We talk so much about the number of independents. It's a huge number. It's grown. More and more people saying, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. The reality, though, is even with people who are independents and registered that way, they tend to vote primarily for one party or the other. So I think you've got a lot of independents in New Hampshire who, if you really ask them the question, are going to say, I'm basically a Democrat. That's how I think of myself, even if they don't want to actually be registered with the Democratic Party. Or for that matter, there's a lot of independents in New Hampshire will say, yeah, I'm basically a Republican, yeah. Even if they don't want to register with the Republican Party.
It's because they have no choice, right? Like, we're not given any options except Democrat or Republican candidates. And once in a while, a third party candidate rolls through, more often than not, someone like RFK Jr., who we all know lost the Democratic primary, but then switched to independent. And then you don't know who they really are or what they stand for when they flip-flop parties. You know what I mean?
Voters do not like flip-floppers. That is for sure. But let's have a listen to RFK Jr. in his own words on the 2024 campaign trail after he lost the Democratic primary.
I'm here to declare myself an independent candidate.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who entered the presidential race in April with a long-shot bid as a Democratic candidate, now embracing the role as a potential third-party spoiler.
The Democrats are frightened that I'm going to spoil the election for President Biden. Republicans are frightened that I'm going to spoil it for President Trump. The truth is, they're both right. My intention is to spoil it for both of them.
Kennedy, suggesting his decision to run as an independent didn't come lightly.
It's very painful for me to let go of the party of my uncles, my father.
Any third party candidacy can be a total wild card here, Savannah. You know this. We don't have to look back that far to history to remember what happened with Ralph Nader in 2000, getting something like close to 100,000 votes in Florida, a state that Al Gore lost by only a few hundred, right? I mean, there is an impact in these very close races, potentially, for a third party candidate to make a difference here.
You know, imagine if you're a voter who voted for that person, you thought they were going to be a Democrat or Republican, and then they switch to one or the other, independent. It's very, very frustrating.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I did a little bit of my own research, right? Bringing something to the table. And here's what I found independent voters telling us. And they all seem similar with this feeling that no one is fully representing them on all the issues that they actually care about.
What political party do you most identify with?
Probably neither.
Would you say you lean more left or more right?
A lot more right.
What's a common misconception or stereotype about Republicans?
I don't know. People think that they're pretty, cold-hearted, I feel, is a big one, because Republicans typically think it's either sink or swim in life.
Do you think that's, a true stereotype?
Yes, but not to the extreme that they paint it as.
What's, a common stereotype about people on the left?
The left's much the opposite. They want to try to help everybody, which is pretty true, which is all right. It's good to want to help everybody. The only issue is you can't help everybody.
Consider someone on either side of the aisle. I'm not, far left or right leaning.
I am an unaffiliated voter, and in New Hampshire, that gives me the ability to vote in the primary on either party.
I became an independent because I would go to Republican events, I would go to Democratic events, and I felt lost in the middle.
I feel like climate change is definitely up there.
Education, access to care, housing as a right.
Nevada wages is not very high, and the cost of living is out of control.
I disagree with them on some fundamental things. I disagree with the Democrats on abortion. I disagree with the Republicans on immigration. So I'm like, well, whoever comes up, I want to know what their stance is on it and what they're going to do.
I'm looking at what the economy's doing, prices of goods, gas, things like that, and what it's going to be like for me to get a mortgage one day.
The economy and inflation, it's hurting all of us. But also with social issues and the world that I want my son to be able to grow into.
We want to be free to vote for whomever we feel like voting for in any election. We don't want to vote for the lesser of two evils. We don't want to vote for the least worst candidate. Look where that sort of voting has gotten us.
Okay, that last independent voter said that independents don't want to vote for the least worst candidate. So how do independent voters know who to vote for rather than just finding the lesser of the evils?
I'm with you. So many people are fed up with just having to choose between the lesser evil, but finding a real independent candidate feels almost impossible, right? I mean, we started the show with Kramer asking, what's the deal with politics? So I have to ask, what's the deal with that? And the truth is the political system makes it incredibly, incredibly difficult for a third party candidate or an independent candidate to even get started. Basic things like the ballot rules are super confusing. There is a massive lack of funding if you're running outside the two-party system. And just overall, the election process is designed for the two major parties, which makes perfect sense because the Democrats and Republicans have been around since the Civil War. The good news is there are some really incredible ideas floating around to try to fix this. So let's go ahead and take a minute to review some of the reform ideas for independent voters. I put together a montage of the best ideas for political change that I've heard so far. They're all doable, and they all will have a significant impact if they can be implemented. And we're here to help.
In the U.S., we basically have two choices in elections. And listen, it's not going amazing.
Government shutdown.
Split Congress. Great divide.
Canada agree.
Too polarized. Big majorities don't want either one of them running.
Big majorities of us actually don't want the two-party system at all. We want more options.
We don't have a politician problem or policy problem. We have a political system problem.
I, as a registered independent, cannot vote in the primaries in my state.
Closed primaries are the biggest voter suppression mechanism in this state.
If we are going to allow the parties to remain the gatekeepers of our primary elections, then they should be open to every taxpaying citizen.
Open primaries will encourage more reasonable candidates.
The more experiments we can try, the more different forms of proportional representation we can implement in the United States, I think the better, ultimately, our democracy will be.
He thinks ranked choice voting, which you guys are doing in Maine, first, second, third, fourth, instant runoff voting, is actually a way to empower more political parties and more independent candidates. Do you buy it?
Well, I think it may be. I don't know about more political parties or independent candidates, but it does. It leaves voters with more options, and they don't have to make an agonizing choice between, is this person going to make it, and am I wasting my vote?
Can a third-party candidate win the White House? Thanks to the Electoral College, not really. In theory, an outsider could win the popular vote. Unlikely, but possible. But to win the Electoral College, you need a majority of electoral votes. In 48 states, if you lose the state's popular vote by even one vote, you lose all that state's electoral votes. In 1982, nearly 20 million people voted for Ross Perot, more than for any third-party candidate in history, more than the combined population of 15 states. How many electoral votes did Ross Perot get? None. In the future, we can give Americans more choices and more power by reforming the Electoral College. But that's not happening this year.
That video showed us just how hard it is for independents, but it's not hopeless. That's why Andrew Yang is our independent hero of the week. You might remember him from his 2020 run, but now he's focused on fixing the system itself with the Forward Party. He's fighting for reforms like ranked choice voting and open primaries, changes that have already helped independent candidates get elected in places like Maine. It's all about giving voters more than two choices and breaking the political gridlock. Here's a clip from his TED Talk on his vision.
I'm speaking here in Canada, and a friend in Canada described living here, or compared it to living in the apartment above a meth lab, where he's getting very nervous about what's happening below him, and is starting to concern the entire neighborhood. So you have the party primaries that are stretching us toward the extremes. Then you have our media organizations that are separating us into tribes and teams. You know which team's media you're watching at any moment. And then you have social media pouring gasoline on the whole thing. All right, so it's gotten to the point now where a U.S. senator said this. I said, a problem is now worth more to us unaddressed than addressed. What happens if some brave legislators lean across the aisle and try to compromise and find a solution to a big, hairy problem? They worked with the enemy, they're ideologically impure, their base turns on them, and their job security goes down. What happens if they let the problem linger and fester? Nothing. They can raise money, they can get votes, they can get you mad, and they have a 94% reelection rate. So you can put any major problem in this bucket, and this is why it feels like we're not making meaningful progress. You could put immigration in there. You could put climate change in there. You could put AI in there. You could put poverty in there. But if you feel like you are forced to join one team or the other, I hope you'll consider joining Team Overhaul the Incentives. Because if enough of us join that team, then maybe America will start to feel a little bit more like one team again, and we can get to work solving the real problems of this era and build a future we can all be excited about.
Thanks, Brian and Layla. That was a fantastic discussion today. Thank you to our listeners for joining our community in Independent Times, where politically homeless voters like you find clarity in a polarized world. You're not alone in this journey. Next time, we're diving into the real battle for accountability. We'll explore the ongoing fight as the free press tries to hold our politicians accountable, examining the high-stake wins and the sobering losses. It's a story with real ups and downs, real consequences for our country, and you won't want to miss it. Until then, please take a moment to follow, like, subscribe, share, and keep charting your own path.